This is Jock Talk, an intimate, in-depth discussion with the best jockeys in thoroughbred racing. Presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
25-year-old Mario Gutierrez, who touched Derby, 1:38.
Digging down for the final 16th under Victor Espinosa.
Joe Calamo in the ride of his life, in the race of his life.
Gary Stevens, 3 Preaknesses.
A brilliant ride by Calvin Burrell.
Up the inside under Johnny Velasquez to take it.
Shanghai Bobby and Rosina Pravnik come again to beat. He's had enough.
Raji Barrage aboard, crushing the field here.
Perfectly ridden by Javier Castellano.
A scintillating performance under Rafael Bejarano.
Now, here's Christina McManigal.
Hello again, everyone. Welcome to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. I am retired jockey Christina McManigal, and I am joining you tonight from our Lexington, Kentucky studio. Thank you, everyone, for listening on Sirius 220, XM 206, and to those of you listening to our website at horseracingradio.net. A portion of the proceeds from this show go to the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund. The PDJF is a nonprofit charity that provides much-needed assistance to disabled riders who have given everything to the sport. If you are able to help, please visit the website pdjf.org. All right, we are in for something a little bit different this evening. Who better to have on Jock Talk than a former jockey turned clerk of scales who knows everything about the sport and what exactly goes on in the jocks room? It's going to be a fun hour. A multiple stakes winning jockey, he racked up 231 wins, nearly $2 million in earnings before becoming the clerk of scales at Monmouth Park. Steve Sisonis, welcome to Jock Talk.
How are you, Christina? Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for joining us this evening, Steve. And I couldn't wait to get you on the show, Steve. You have a very interesting, different story, something we've never really had here on Jock Talk. And like I said...
It's okay. You don't have to lie. It's okay.
No, it's true. I swear to God, this is going to be a great hour.
I bet you say that to all your guests.
No, I do not. No, I swear. It's going to be a fun hour, Steve. And so I know, but I want our audience members to know, you have a different accent, so please tell us, where are you from, Steve?
A different accent, yes. I was born in Athens, Greece, many, many, many years ago. And my parents decided to send me to this country for a better future. I was supposed to be a doctor, but somehow I was introduced to a trainer, and he talked to me out of being a doctor, and he suggested for me to become a jockey. So I dropped out of college, and the next day I was on the racetrack, and my parents were very upset. But that's what I wanted to do.
They weren't too happy. They weren't too happy with that decision.
And here I am now, clerk of scales.
Wow. Well, I want to go back to, you said you're from Athens, Greece. I know nothing about Greece. I've never been there. I don't know if very many of the people listening tonight know a lot about Greece. So you grew up there. Tell us what it was like growing up in Greece.
Very different than here. Very strict life. Very strict parents. No smoking was allowed. No drinking. The schools were much stricter. You had to dress. They wanted the way they wanted you to dress. I mean, you couldn't wear jeans and sneakers. You had to wear blue pants. A nice clean shirt, always, your hair had to look always perfect, short hair. So it was very tough, very tough to be there. Were the teachers had the right to kind of be very strict. Actually, they had the green light to hit you if you didn't do your homework. So all around, till I was 16, it was a very strict life. And whatever you did, they always you was always watched in a way. From your parents or even teachers, close friends, when you were going out, you had to be back at a certain time. For dinner, you had to be there always on time. In a way, people there my age at the time were brought up a lot different than here.
So, Steve, you said that the teachers could beat you if you didn't do your homework. Did that happen to you often, or were you a good student?
I was a very good student when I wanted to be.
When you wanted to be.
Schools were tough, but I was good. Yeah, I was a very good student.
So they didn't ever have to beat you for not doing your homework?
Yeah, no.
No,
no. No, I was a good student.
And so
and
you're
a good kid.
Yeah. You're a good student.
But I give my parents credit for that.
Absolutely. And they wanted you to be a doctor. And what exactly, in what type of medicine did they want you to go in?
It didn't matter as long as I was any kind of a doctor. It didn't matter.
It didn't matter.
So they can brag to their friends or relatives and say, yeah, my son went to America and became a doctor. That was their thing. It was kind of, they just wanted to brag about their son. And once they heard that I dropped out of school to go to the racetrack, they didn't accept it. And actually, they were lying to their friends and their relatives there because they were asking, oh, how's Steve doing in America? Oh, he's doing good. He's a doctor and he's doing very good. Because they could not tell him that I work on a racetrack. It was for over there at the time, it was very distracting. The racetrack is a very kind of... they see it as I don't know how to explain it. You're kind of disgracing yourself when you work on a racetrack.
Were there any?
So they didn't accept it. Even when I talked to them, they were still against it. But later on, after 3 years after that, they kind of said, okay. I would call them up and say, hey, I won a race today. Mm-hmm. But they still wouldn't get it. It wasn't me who won a race today. I never went to the racetrack before. They didn't even know what a racetrack was.
Oh, wow.
I said, yeah, you know, I said I rode the horse and I was in a race and I won. Oh, they still wouldn't get it. But after a while, they accepted it.
Now,
and they were fine with it. But it took them a long time.
Are there any racetracks in Greece?
There's one in Athens.
Did you ever go there when you were there?
Yeah, actually, I rode there for a few months.
Really?
Yeah, after I rode here. I started here, but I went to Greece for Easter, I think it was. Yeah, I went there for Easter in April. And... I wanted to go to Athens to see the racetrack for the first time to see what it was like. And when I got there, I was approached by this security guy. And he said, "Who are you? You don't belong here." I said, "Because I went to the backside instead of, you know, the grandstand." So, mm-hmm. I said, "I'm a jockey too." I said, "I ride in the U.S." And I just came here to see what the racetrack is like in Greece. Oh, and then he kind of said, okay, well, just come with me. And he took me to the cafeteria, and there were a bunch of trainers there. And actually, they offered me a contract. I said, I can't stay very long. I'm only allowed to stay here 3 months. So if I'm going to do anything here, it has to be only for like a couple of months or so. And that's what happened. I wrote some nice words there. It was a little different than an hour racetrack here, a little behind. It was like a lot of turns, which I wasn't used to. I had to work a lot of horses in the morning to kind of get used to the track. And so I did that for a couple of months or so, and I came back.
So, Steve, what do you mean by a lot of turns? So they didn't go like we do to the U.S.?
I don't want to say it was like a big circle, but it was the shape of this track was like one of big, almost a circle, a zero, almost like a zero. So it was a lot, I would say, a lot more turns than the ones we got here.
Did they go to the right?
Yeah, same direction like here.
Oh, okay. Okay,
but
same
just
direction.
Kinda, you could not go, like when you break out of the gate, you cannot go 3-4 wide. I don't care if you're 1-9, you'll get beat.
Really?
So you had to get position right away.
Yeah.
Right away. I mean, coming out of the gate, like first few yards, you had to look to go towards the fence.
Wow. That had to be...
For me, it was a little difficult at first, but you get used to it. Yeah.
Sounds rough, like a lot of, you know...
Yeah, no, it was rough, and the kids there, they were not... they were intimidated because some jockey from America came there to ride, and he had more experience, or he, whatever, rode better horses. They didn't care, so he... And the style was different there from other riders. There were, I was riding most of the horses that I rode were pretty much 6-5 and 7-5 favors all the time. So actually I was, had to watch myself, but they were trying to box you in, you know, scare you, you know, ride you tight.
Sure.
You know, from the days you rode, you know, some people kind of ride you tight. Not drop you, but you wouldn't get they wouldn't give you a break, even if you asked for one.
Exactly. Intimidation, right?
Yeah. Oh, I don't blame him. I mean, you know, somebody knew went there and tried to steal their money or mounts.
So, oh, yeah.
I don't blame him for trying to do what they did.
No, exactly. How about... the crowds, were there a lot of people to come out to the races?
Crowds, unbelievable crowds.
Really?
And very violent crowds. I mean, if you get beat on a favor, you have to kind of watch yourself going back to the jocks room.
Really?
Yeah, very, very, very violent. And they didn't care if security was there or not. They would throw, actually one race... I got dropped coming out of the gate because the horse made a left turn. And I lost my balance and I fell. And when I went back to the jocks room, I had, let me see, two bottles were thrown at me. One missed me by inches just before I walked into the jocks room. It was a bottle that hit right next to me, like, right by the door when I was going in. Dismissed me. So rough crowd.
Yeah, I never had anyone throw a bottle at me when I was riding the Monmouth Park.
Yeah, well,
no.
In my own country, I almost got killed.
Oh my gosh, that's terrible. Yeah. It was
tough riding there. No, I mean the people there. Here, you know, you kind of. People get mad, you know, they say whatever, jock got dropped or whatever, the horse dropped and nothing. Okay, well, move on, next race. Or not over there. They somehow, you know, they think everything is intentional, that I kind of jump off, or I don't know how they see it, how they saw it.
Wow.
So they're going to get mad, and because, like I said, I was riding a lot of favors. So that particular horse was like 3 to 5, and they wouldn't give him their money back because the horse dropped him coming out of the gate.
Sure.
As soon as they broke, the horse made a left turn.
So they didn't refund their bets.
The racetrack wouldn't give him their money back. They said the horse broke out of the gate and it just, you know, did what he did.
Oh, goodness.
But they didn't want, you know, they wanted to get paid. They wanted their money back.
Right.
Because they said the horse did not run.
Wow.
So the track said no. Next thing you know, they came after me. Police came. They kind of locked me in a small area to, you know, to protect me.
Uh-huh.
And then they went after the tellers to get the money. And I was on the 11 o'clock news.
Oh, my gosh. That's one way to make the news. Wow.
Yeah, I mean, it was tough. And that night, the police took me home at 10 o'clock at night.
Wow. Escort, police escort.
Yeah.
Wow.
And like the daily news that we have here in New York, let's say, in Athens, the number one newspaper said he jumped like an American cowboy. The front page.
Oh, wow. They have your picture on there and everything, huh?
It was some kind of experience riding over there.
I see. So
you had to protect yourself every time you went out. You couldn't talk to people that they didn't know, you know, because there are other things that kind of don't go with the sport over there, you know.
Sure.
You get approached by people offering you money to play games, something that I never did.
Right.
So, but they'll try you, you know, they'll make an offer and see what you do. Because you're riding the best horses, they figure, you know, everybody's betting money on you, they figure they'll approach you, they give you, let's say, they offer you an amount of money and see if you accept it. And then they'll control your whole life.
Yes.
So I avoided that, so I couldn't really be seen out in public.
Yeah.
So it was it was tough. It was a contract for 3 months, but those 3 months for me were like years.
You said enough of this. I'm ready to go back, right?
Yeah.
Do you think that experience in Athens made you a better rider as far as maybe being aggressive out of the gate, or just looking behind your shoulder and being aware of where you are in a race? Do you think it made you better?
No, it didn't make me better. I was already better when I got there by far, because the riders are so far behind. They didn't know how to switch sticks. They don't grab the horse's mane when they come out of the gate. So every time I rode a horse, I was 3 and 4 out of the gate, and they were still there.
Wow.
So it was like... And the last month I was there, I was trying to teach the younger riders how to come out the gate, I said, this is the best way to do it. I said, not the way you guys learn here. I said, you're supposed to learn our way, the way we do it in the U.S.
Yeah.
Because they were, I guess nobody kind of taught them from here how to ride there.
Right.
So I was kind of, in a way, teaching him a little bit, a few tricks that we know here that they don't know there.
Sure.
Make them better riders, that's all. I have to. I just did it on my own.
Right. What'd you do?
I said, listen, if you ride the way we ride in America, I said, you're going to get better mounts. You're going to get more horses to ride. Because you're going to see how you break out of the gate and how you switch sticks, And it's going to help your career to get better riders.
Absolutely.
So I started doing that before I left, which I felt good about that.
Of course. Of course, making a difference before you leave.
But I didn't learn anything there from riding because there was nobody there to teach me anything. I was teaching them. They didn't know anything. Like, way behind.
Steve Sisonis joining me on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. So, Steve, let's back up a little bit and talk about when you were first learning how to ride. And you said you moved to the States. Your parents wanted you to be a doctor. They couldn't wait to brag to their relatives about how their son is a doctor. And you said you met a trainer and then you quit school, went to the racetrack. Well, tell us about that meeting you had with the trainer and why you decided to do what you did.
Well, I was I had a job. I was working at a restaurant. I was a busboy, actually. And it was this guy that used to come to the restaurant almost every other night, every night, every other night. He was there. And he say, "How you doing?" And I just started talking to him. He said, "You know, you're wasting your time here. You should be. You got the perfect size. You should be a jockey." I didn't even know what a jockey was. My parents never had horses, so I didn't know anything about horses. Mm-hmm. I said, "What do you mean, a jockey?" I said, "Well, what is a jockey? I don't know what that is." He said, "You know, ride horses. Ride horses." I said, "Listen, I never ridden a horse before. My parents never had horses, so I don't know anything about horses." "Mm-hmm. Oh, well," he said, "come to the farm. You see the horses there, and if you like it, I'll tell you how everything works. See if you like it. If you don't like it, you can always go back to school or come back here or do your job here."
Yeah.
So he kept teasing me. So I said, "One day, you know, you let me know what is good for you, and I'll go to the farm to see the farm and the horses and tell me about this thing being a jockey." Yeah, we went to the farm. He explained everything, how you got to do this. Start maybe, you know, walking hot in the beginning and da-da-da, and then I'll be teaching you after we're done training, little by little. It might take a year or two to get your license. Show me the horses, which I really liked horses. Next thing you know, I was it. I quit school, quit my job. Everybody went nuts. And next thing you know, I was at the Meadowlands, I remember. That's where I started working first, at the Meadowlands. That's where I was. Mm-hmm. And I didn't even know how to walk a horse. I walked into the barn. "All right, Steve, you know how to walk a horse?" I said, "Yeah, I know how to walk one." I wasn't afraid of them, but he said, "Okay, yeah, walk one." I didn't even know how to do that. So they had to teach me how to walk a horse first. And his son, which is, I don't know if you heard the name, his name is Bernie Dowd. He's one of the best veterinarians in the grounds in Monmouth Park.
Okay, yeah.
So he's the one that was teaching after he was done galloping his father's horses. He would take me with the pony to the training track and just teach me everything right from the start, how to post, everything.
Wow.
And 2 years later, I was started riding. Actually, his Bernie's father said, "You got to go with a bigger outfit, have more horses that can help you more." So I started working for Joe Pierce Jr. Mm-hmm. I started riding for Joe Pierce. Won my first race, second, third. And then he stopped me. He said, "You got to save your money." He was like a teacher at the same time. Mm-hmm. No smoking, no drinking. I said, "I already know that. My parents taught me never to do that. So I never no drugs, all that. Stay away from all that." So he stopped me for a couple of months. He said, you move to your winning races too. You got to get experience before you win your fifth. Mm-hmm. So he helped me with that. And pretty much after that, it kind of took off after that.
So you say he stopped you. He wanted you to wait before you had your fifth winner, which
yeah,
is
yeah, I think I don't remember my stats exactly, but I think I was winning. The way he was explaining it, he said, you're winning, but you're not learning anything.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He said, you go to the front, and you sit on a horse, and you win. He said, you didn't learn anything from that race. What did you do? You're a raw horse. You just sat there and won. They said, yeah, can't do that.
Yeah. So I wanted
you
to
ride other horses, bad horses, come from out of it, switch sticks. Practice, even if you last, you got to ride your horse to the wire, switch sticks, even if you're 20 less behind the field. So Mr. Pierce taught me a lot. And
oh, yeah. So then did he start putting you on the slower horses maybe so that you had the opportunity to just practice?
Yeah, he kind of, he said, what happens if you have to ride a horse in between, you got to go in between horses? He said, you didn't even know how to do that.
Yeah.
Don't switch sticks. He says, you got to practice. You're not ready yet. You're not ready to win your fifth, because if you win your fifth, you know, then you start, your year starts, and you have no experience. So the trainers don't want to see that. They want to see you ready on a horse.
Exactly.
They don't want to see you get beat because you didn't switch sticks. I mean, you know how it is. You rode, so.
Were there...
They watch everything. They see if you're a weak finisher, if you don't... So they look for every little bit of this and say, oh, that kid is not ready. I can't use him.
Right.
So that's what he tried to do. He wanted to make sure that I was good to go.
He sounds like a very good teacher. Now, were there any...
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I love Mr. Pierce.
Yeah.
He was the best.
Were there any jocks in the room at the time that kind of took you under their wing, showed you a few tricks, tried to help you switch sticks, whatever it might be?
Yeah, I remember who was the back then, Doc Thomas. I don't know if you're familiar with those riders, Doc Thomas. I rode Wesley Ward.
Mm-hmm.
He was a rider back then,
sure.
Believe it or not.
Yeah.
Chris Antling?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So they took you under their wing and tried to help you, show you the ropes?
Chris Antling, actually, I became very good friends with Chris Antling. He helped me a lot.
Wow.
And for me, not because I was friends with the guys. Up to this day, I think he was the best rider ever.
Wow. Such a sad story that is. Oh, goodness.
A lot of people might disagree with that, but I thought he was... If not the best, one of the best.
Wow, Steve, we're going to go to a quick commercial break. We'll continue our visit with Steve Sisonis after this short commercial break. Stay with us. You're listening to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, here on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Tito Beveridge, founder and master distiller of Tito's Handmade Vodka, America's original craft vodka. I believe in the craft process of distilling in batches using old-fashioned pot stills, and that's the way we still make Tito's Handmade Vodka today. We even won the World Spirits Competition, double gold, unanimous judge's choice. Tito's Handmade Vodka is made from 100% corn, so it's naturally gluten-free. For recipes, videos, and more, visit titosvodka.com. 80 proof Tito's Handmade Vodka, 5th Generation Inc., distilled and bottled in Austin, Texas.
Being a jockey may be one of the more dangerous professions in all of sports. In a split second, you can go from the top of the standings to never being able to stand again. I'm Mike Penna, and over the years, I've had the privilege of talking with many of the top jockeys in thoroughbred racing. And to a person, they will tell you that on any given day, before any given race, when they get a leg up, there's no guarantee they'll return the way they left. It's simply the reality of being a jockey. The Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund does amazing work, providing financial assistance to some 60 former jockeys who have suffered catastrophic on-track injuries. Since its founding 10 years ago, the PDJF has disbursed over $7 million to permanently disabled jockeys. And I'm proud to say that the PDJF is the official charity of the Horse Racing Radio Network, but the only way they can continue helping those disabled riders who have given our sport so much is through your generosity and support. So I encourage you to visit pdjf.org and start making a difference today.
This is Jock Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka.
Welcome back to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. Christina McMandigal joined tonight by former jockey, clerk of scales, Steve Sisonis. Steve, we were talking about before we went to the break, the riders in the room you were with. Wesley Ward, Chris Antley, you said he was one of the best riders you've ever seen. And you were taking your time. Joe Pierce said, hey, stop, before you win your fifth race, before you start your apprenticeship. Wait, you gotta learn some things before you keep going. And so those riders and everyone helped you learn. And how long did it take for you to win your fifth race after that?
I don't remember, a few months. I don't remember the exact number, but it was a few months.
Did Joe Pierce think you were ready?
I went to Florida, I think, for a little bit. I came back.
You were switching
and
sticks?
I started riding Arrowhead Garden State. Mm-hmm. I was a leading apprentice there for a little bit that I rode there, and then I went to Mama's, a leading apprentice of Mama's. Actually, they gave me the gold watch that year. Me and Chris Shanley got the gold watch.
Well, that's awesome.
Leading apprentice, and he was a leading jockey.
Wow.
And everything was going good. I lost the bug. I was still doing good. I had my agent helped me a lot. At the time, Mr. Joe Rosen.
Who was your agent?
He's not with us anymore. A great guy and a great friend.
What was his name?
Joe Rosen.
Okay, yeah.
And then after I lost the bug, I was doing good. Then I broke my leg at the Meadowlands. I was doing good. I won a few stakes. I was in the standings. And after that, I was out for a while. I came back. A little slow in the beginning. Picked up again. Started doing good. Rode a Garden State, finished fourth. I remember I finished fourth one year without an agent.
Wow.
So it was no regrets. I was happy the way things turned out. Even that I wasn't meant to be a professional jockey. until I think it was in the 90s, mid-90s, when I decided to give it up.
I have the stats right here, Steve. 1999, you had a 14-year riding career. Why did you decide to hang up your tack?
I don't know. I was riding some kind of horses that were kind of didn't have much of a shot. I lost a lot of business.
How about injuries?
I didn't want to go to another track and ride. Maybe it'd do better. I just, I always liked Mama's Park. I wanted to stay there. I didn't want to ride any place else. So I kind of decided that year when I was there, I said, that's it. I'm done. I just didn't want to do it no more. I just thought I had enough. I had a couple other bad falls. I didn't get hurt, but I kind of... couple of horses broke down. I didn't like that. So that kind of made my decision a lot easier.
Sure.
So I just decided to kind of stop.
You said you broke your leg.
Yes, at the Meadowlands.
Yeah, what happened there?
Actually, the track was extreme. I think it was December 23rd. I still remember December 23rd, 1986. And it was cold. Track was not best of shape. Kind of hard. I don't want to say concrete, but that would be a better word. But, you know, they didn't cancel the races. We kind of rode, and I'm in a race, and there was a horse in front of me that broke down. Mm-hmm. And I'm right behind him, and I couldn't avoid him. So I hit the horse in front of me, and I went flying, and I broke my leg.
Mm. How long did it take?
Stunk for a while because it was the first time I got hurt. I didn't like it.
Wow. How long did it take for you to get back?
Well, I didn't get back till 6 months later.
Wow. Yeah. Did you miss it when you were on the shelf with the broken leg? Were you looking forward to getting back?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. I wanted to get back.
Yeah, exactly. I remember.
I was doing so good. I didn't want to. It bothered me because I got hurt, but it happened. It's part of the sport.
Well, exactly. Only sport where the ambulance
follows. Things were a little different when I kind of came back. Kind of people, I mean, I'm sure you've been in that spot too. You kind of people kind of forget about you. Like, you know, even the people that you rode and you win races for, kind of like, okay, yeah, we'll find something for you. I wasn't ready for that.
So they
wanted to see you other people's courses and see how you're doing, then they give you a shot. But I mean, if everybody says that,
then you're in trouble.
I gotta start from somewhere. Somebody has to give me a shot.
exactly. And that's always, you know, I know very well that was always the most frustrating thing because I would get hurt and then I would try so hard and work so hard with physical therapy and to be strong as possible when I would come back. And then you get back and then someone else is riding all of your horses and then it's you know, your business is taken and people, like you said, they want to see you ride before they give you a shot. But unfortunately, you know, when they all say that, then it's hard to get them out. You know?
Yeah, very frustrating.
Absolutely frustrating.
And I wasn't the type to go out begging for a mat. I refused to do that.
Well.
Yes. I'd stop by the barn. I would never, ever beg. Never did. Never.
Yeah.
Beg a trainer for a horse? Never. You want to ride me because you like the way I ride? That's fine. But for me to kind of beg you and come and gallop 10 horses for you and you put me one? No. I never did that. No.
Sure. Yeah, that's not...
That's not me.
No, not at all. So you decided to hang up your tack. You decided to retire in 1999. And what did you think you would end up doing? Did you think, oh, maybe one day I'll be the clerk of scales? Or did that even cross your mind?
I never ever thought that I'll be the clerk of scales. Because, first of all, I didn't... the people that were clerk of scales were, some of them were very tough on me. Mm. So I looked at them like they were my enemies. I mean, you step on the scale and one day I had my light boots on and the clerk of scales said, listen, Jock, you can ride with those things? I said, yes, sir. So he watched me until it was time for me to go out there and ride, so I wouldn't put my regular boots on. So I looked at those people, like I wouldn't even call them by their names. I would say, look at this. I say, guy, come on. You had to follow me to see if I'm going to, so I wouldn't put my regular boots on. So I never, ever wanted, I never even thought that I would become one of them one day. So as I was in the jocks room, they would ask me, you want to answer the phone? I was answering the phone once in a while. Because the clerk of scales had to go the publicity for a racer too and come back. So a few times I would answer the phone. I say, yeah, okay, how can I help you? Yeah, no problem. So I'll put them a hold and get the column in or whatever they need it. So this guy retired, and the assistant at the time, he took the job. He became the clerk of skills. And the clerk of skills that retired, I went over to the management of Mammoth Park and told him that Steve would make a great assistant clerk of skills. You don't even have to look for anybody. They asked me, you sure you want to take that job? So I said, yes, I'll take the job. It's a big deal. I figured, yeah, why not?
Why not?
And I was guiding horses in the morning. I mean, I never really, when I started riding, I stopped riding. I didn't stop guiding horses. Mm-hmm. So I was doing both for a little while. And I was an assistant for 10 years. I learned a lot. Jimmy Lodges was the clerk of skills. He helped me a lot. Eamon Daly was the clerk before him. And, he helped me to get the job. And now Jimmy became a steward, and then I became the clerk of skills.
The rest is history, Steve. There you go. And before we started recording here on air, you were quick to remind me how many times I was running late to Mammoth Park, and you were kind enough to keep me on my mounts. I'll never forget the first time I talked, maybe one of the first times I talked to you. I don't remember exactly, but I'm stuck in beach traffic. It's like Labor Day weekend, and it's not moving, and I have like 2 minutes to get there. I thought I left with plenty of time for Maryland. I was riding in Maryland, and then I was traveling to Mammoth Park. And there was I was running a little bit late, and I think you called me to make sure.
Yeah, I called you because I didn't want to take you off the horse. At least I had to know. I knew you were coming. I know you were running late. I said I wanted to know how far away are you? Are you going to be here on time?
Uh-huh.
Should I take you off? You're going to make it. So, which a lot of clerk of skills don't do.
Right.
It's the rider's job or the agent's job to call the clerk of skills. It's not my job to call you and ask you where you are. Clerk of skills' job, if you're late, you're not here, I'll give you a little bit of time. If you didn't make it, you're off the course.
Yeah.
But me as a rider, kind of, I know that in that particular case, it was you. But when I know a rider is coming from hours away to ride a horse, it would bother me to take him off.
Right.
You know what I mean? So I had to like triple check. Okay, you coming? You gonna make it? I give you extra time. Can you make it? Because I don't want to take you off. I'm gonna feel really bad to take you off. And then if the rider said, "Listen, I'll be there. Give me another 10 minutes, 15 minutes. I'm right here on whatever." You know. The light, or I'm right here close.
Yeah,
I give him a few extra time to make it, because I wouldn't want the jock to come to the jocks and I have to tell him, listen, you're off the horse, jock.
After they drove 2 hours, right? That's not a good feeling.
So you know, I kind of don't want to be hated by the jocks that come from, you know, all over. At least they know. I'll give them a little extra time if they help me, like if they call me and say, listen, Judge, can I, I'm kind of rushing traffic. Sometimes they lie, too, but that's okay. You know, I'm running a little late. Can I give them a little extra time? I'll give you extra time. So I try not to be too tough.
And you were a rider, and that has to help. You know what it's like.
So what did you tell your agent when I didn't take you off?
I said,
were you happy?
I thought you were awesome. I thought you were awesome. Because let me tell you, at Penn National, when you ride at Penn National and you're 2 seconds late, they take you off. So I was very, very appreciative that you did not do that.
Yeah, and well, the clerk was close from Penn National. Didn't call you to ask you where you were, did he?
He did not.
He did not, right?
No, he didn't. So, no, he didn't.
Like
no.
I said, some of them are very strict. They just they don't care. Like, he did his job, actually.
Yeah. Yeah, you can't blame them. You can't blame them.
I would have done the same thing.
Right.
I mean, I'm not saying the guy. I mean, the guy is doing his job. You're not there. You didn't show up. You're running late. You're off the horse. He didn't have to call you.
Exactly. Exactly.
It's not an easy job when it comes to that. Because
no.
The guy is doing his job, and you get mad because the guy did his job and took you off.
Right.
All right. Well, I do that. I call. At least I. One thing about me. I will call. If I don't hear from them and they're running late, I don't have to, but I will call.
Yeah.
Or the agent or the jock. I said, listen, where's your jock? He's running late. You got another 20 minutes. So call him. See where he is. Is he coming? Don't take you off? At least I give him one more chance.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Well, I don't have to do it, but
no,
I do.
Not at all. You don't have to. Tell us about this now. So we've had several jockeys on, and I will ask them, you know, what's the atmosphere in the jocks room? Because there is no other sport where the competitors come back into the same room and, you know, tempers are often flared and they're all
whatever.
You know, maybe someone cut someone off and then they're trying to get in a fight. And how is the atmosphere there? And are you in charge of making sure it's, you know, it's peaceful and people aren't fighting and... what do you deal with that?
Well, if there's, let's say that if there's an objection and an inquiry and you watch the replay and you see that the rider almost went down because some other rider cut him off, I would get the security guard and tell him, listen, this jock and that jock, when they come back, make sure you stand in between them. If anybody starts punching, you let me know who did it. If I don't see it, if this happens in the back, you follow them.
Yeah.
Make sure you stay in between. That's what I do. I'm on the park.
Wow.
Now, sometimes they can, you know, they can still... One time I had the security guard because two jocks were cursing each other, were going to fight. And they went to the shower. They were both done. So they were in the shower together. So I had the security guard stand right there. I said, you watch them. Watch them take showers just in case they start fighting in the shower.
Wow. That's
so
terrible.
I had the security guard watch them right there, like there's a security guard, like a Bravo.
Yeah,
like a, he watched both of them, make sure that there was no... No punches were thrown.
Wow. Did you...
If anybody tries to throw a punch, you let me know. Who did it? Who started it? Who was first? And then from there, then I call the stewards, and then the fines and start, and they got to go see the stewards, and who knows what else.
Now, you don't have to answer this question, Steve, if you don't want to, but did you ever get in any fights in the jocks room?
Okay, all the years that I rode,
I
was a very clean rider. I never got taken down.
Wow.
I never got dazed.
Wow.
Never. I never bothered anybody in a race. So I never, ever had any fights because of what happened in the race.
Right.
Never.
Right.
Because I always... kept a straight course. I wasn't trying to ride somebody tight. I didn't try to get cute, you know, carry somebody out. So, and I'm very proud of that. I never got dazed. I never got fined. Never got taken down. So I was, not many jocks can say they have that record.
I can't say that I have that record. Definitely not. Definitely not.
So,
not that I was bad.
You don't bother nobody. Nobody bothers you. There's no fights.
Yeah.
That's the way I was.
Exactly. Exactly. Now, what else is involved with being the clerk of scales? You have to obviously you lay in and out the jocks, and what else is involved? Take us through a day at Monmouth Park.
It's nothing complicating. It's just riders come in, they have to sign in, they check their weights, and they write down if they're okay. If they're not, they put down whatever. I'm going to do 1 pound over or 2 pounds over. Make sure they're there on time for the, if they ride the first, let's say, they got to be there 11:15, 11:30. So everybody has to be on time. And then pretty much after the till, it's time to check, you know. And then you got the thing that if they put down okay, make sure that when they step on the scale, it's so the weight is okay. They're over that, and then you have to either call the stewards or call them over, mm-hmm. pound or two over. You tell them, you give them a warning, don't put down okay, and you step on the scale, you're two over.
Right.
Because they can, you know, you get fined for that. Pretty much, a lot of them come early, they go to the box. There's no really, nothing else to report but that. Just, they come in, they check in, and they go to the corner, they take showers. Some of them exercise in the back, some of them go to the box. I just sit there, and then I get the phone call from stewards with the chain, with the scratches, and if I have any, you know, somebody's taking off, I gotta let the stewards know, and then we'd go over the changes, rider changes, scratches, and then after that, I have to call the announcer, mutuals. All the changes and the bookkeeper, all that, and until it's time to check.
Steve, how about big race days? The Haskell is coming up here before you know it, a couple weeks. Is there anything different on those big race days? Is it just more hectic? Is there a lot of, obviously a lot of riders shipping in? How is it different?
Well, it's different. It's our biggest day, and you want to make sure that everything goes perfect. I let the valets know, come here, come to the track early, get set with the riders, don't get stuck in traffic. I want everybody here early because I want the day to go as, I want it to go as perfect as it can go because I don't want to hear no any problems, or I don't want to hear something from the management that something happened. So, and then I let the riders know the ride that day to give himself a little extra time, come a little earlier because you're going to be, there's going to be a lot of traffic. So I start like that from the day before. And then we start early. Everybody's there early. We get, the first thing that I do when I get there is kind of make sure that riders that come from out of town, some of them are coming from Saratoga, so I kind of check with them what time they're going to be there, what time they have to be there. Because they call, Monmouth Park calls, they want to know what time their riders are going to get there. And then there's people that want to sign autographs. And pretty much it's the out-of-town riders that are coming in. Like last year with Victor Espinoza, it was a chaos. You know, everybody wanted to see him and sign autographs. What time is he coming? So it was stuff like that. Horses that are running has a lot to do with it. Triple Crown winner grows attention. You know, people come, they want to talk to, they want to see the jock, they want to take pictures. So you got to make a little time for that. So you just got to be able to kind of give the jock a little rest, and at the same time you want him to go out there and sign some autographs and take some pictures. So you, I'm kind of part of that in a way. I have to tell him, you know, then he has to go on TV for a 5-minute interview. We got to make time for that. Everything is on, has to be kind of on time.
Right.
Let's say after the 4th, they want to talk to, let's say, Don Velasquez, or so I let Johnny know that, listen, Johnny, they want you on TV after the 4th, let's say. So if he's off the next race. So just making sure that everything goes smooth.
Well, Steve, you wouldn't believe this, but we only have 1 minute left. So this
wow.
hour's... I know. I told you it would be fun. I told you it would be fun.
What did I do, Lee?
You did fantastic.
Did I do all right?
You did great. You did great. Thank you so much for joining us
anytime.
This evening. And hopefully I'll see you at Monmouth Park sometime soon. And thanks
yes,
again,
please,
Steve.
Please come and visit, yes.
Sounds
we
good,
haven't
Steve.
Seen you in a while.
All right. Have a good one, Steve. Thank you so much.
Okay. Tell John Fraser hello.
I will.
All right.
Well, if you missed any portion of tonight's show, you can check out our website, horseracingradio.net and Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. You will also find a full schedule for every show on the Horse Racing Radio Network on our website. We bring you something new almost every day of the week. Check it out. Again, that's horseracingradio.net. Now, please join me next Tuesday at 6 o'clock Eastern Time with another edition of Jock Talk presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. For our producer, Lee Delapina, I'm Christina McManigal, and thank you for listening.